A 1,000-mile Great Lakes Island adventure, one woman's epic journey exploring the diverse islands of the five Great Lakes. That's a hike in itself, that title.
It is.
Laureen, this isn't your first book, and let's hope it's not your last, and it's not your first journey either. So take us back to the beginning. Tell us a little bit about the previous books and how this whole thing started for you.
It all started when a midlife crisis evolved into a midlife adventure. I decided to get to know my favorite place, Lake Michigan, by walking step by step all the way around it and recording it in my muscles and bones. And I had so much fun on that first adventure. Even as I was doing the last steps back into Chicago, I thought, this can't be the only adventure. I've got to have more. So my second hike was a second 1,000-mile hike touching all five Great Lakes. And as I was completing that one, I thought, let's do one more. This should be a trilogy. So my final adventure exploring the Great Lakes is launched me off the shoreline onto the islands of the Great Lakes.
You're not addicted by now? It seems to me like, you know, when I've looked back, because I've read the books, all three of them, and in the first one, when you start out, quite naturally, you have some doubts if you're going to be able to complete it. You obviously did, and you went on. I would imagine that at some point, this does have an addictive element to it, doesn't it?
It does, but to undertake a 1,000-mile adventure is a lot of pressure and logistics and planning. So I will continue having adventures in the Great Lakes and exploring them and returning to many of the places I've already been, but I won't take on another 1,000-mile adventure, something on that scale at this point.
So tell us now about the new book, which is coming out in May. And this one, you're exploring islands. When I thought of, and I've been in Michigan much of my life, I think of a few islands. Reading your book, I realize there's a lot more than a few. So tell us about how this journey took shape and where are these islands?
These islands are throughout the Great Lakes Basin. I was surprised to learn that there are over 35,000 islands in the Great Lakes Basin, and they're very diverse. I expected them to be quite similar, but geologically they're quite diverse, everything from limestone to dolostone to granite to Isle Royal, which is one half of a syncline, which is when the Earth's crust is actually flipped up on edge. So just the geology alone was fascinating. And Montreal is on an island. I knew where Montreal was, but I wasn't aware it was on an island, so I put that into my itinerary. So, yeah, these islands are throughout the basin. Lake Huron has the majority of the islands. Eastern Lake Huron is full of islands. Most of them are there.
With that many islands to choose from, how did you choose?
It was difficult, but some choices were obvious or places that I wanted to go to before, like the Manitou Islands. I also wanted to get out to Isle Royal and kayak in the Apostle Islands. And Manitoulin Island is the largest island in the Great Lakes Basin and the largest island on freshwater in the world. So I wanted to explore there, too.
And how did this differ in the obvious ways? I realize you must have been on water part of the time. When you're walking around the Great Lakes, you're on beach or road or whatever. But in this case, how did it differ to explore islands rather than walking around a Great Lake?
It was quite different. And with the islands, I went into the interior of the island. I didn't just hike around the edges like I did with the lakes. So it was a lot more backcountry hiking, a lot more rugged hiking. Isle Royal was the most rugged hiking I've ever done. And I figured 2,000 miles would have prepared me for that. And it didn't quite do that.
Oh, that's scary because that's still on my bucket list to go there.
You must go. You must go. And there are trails that are not that rugged. But we had a route that took us across the interior of the island, and you cross many ridges doing that. So it's up and down and up and down. And the highest point is over 750 feet above the lake level. So that's like climbing the steps in a 75-story building.
So you must have been carrying different kinds of equipment than you did on your Great Lakes hike, I imagine, including, I believe, an inflatable kayak?
No, I wouldn't carry that with me. There were times that I took it with me in the car, and that I could inflate it and kayak out to islands that were close to shore, like Cana Island, very close to the Door Peninsula in Wisconsin. That kayak was not good for more rugged kayaking, like up in Lake Superior. There I was in a sea kayak with a spray skirt, you know, in a wetsuit.
Lorraine has YouTube videos, and there's lots of them, so not just reading the book, but viewing these online is a special treat as well. And I did see something about the kayak there, which was new to me too. I didn't realize you could have an inflatable, portable type of a kayak, but that's that opens up all kinds of vistas too.
It does, and I'm quite strong, but having to take a kayak and throw it on the top of a vehicle, I just didn't want to be doing that. So this is a high-tech inflatable kayak. It's not like your pool, you know, inflatables. It's it has seven different chambers, and it's very comfortable to paddle in very protected waters. So, yeah, that was wonderful.
And how did you prepare for this particular journey, Lorraine, in terms of physical training, in terms of research, history maybe, geology? How did you get ready for this?
Well, I always read everything I can get my hands on. I have a wonderful Great Lakes library at this point. So I did a lot of reading, and I also did a lot more kayaking to prepare for this. I live on Gogoak Lake in Battle Creek, so I was able to take my inflatable kayak and take it down and throw it in the water and paddle that several times a week just to get the upper body strength to ready me for this adventure.
Some of the adventures that you had within your adventure, for instance, there was a historic reenactment that you took part in. Tell us about that.
Well, during the War of 1812, there was a naval battle on Lake Erie, and my adventure coincided with the bicentennial reenactment. So they brought a dozen ships from all over the world. The one from farthest away was from Norway. Most were from America and Canada, and they brought them to Lake Erie, and they actually staged a reenactment out on Lake Erie, and I stood in for a private on one of the boats, the lead boat in the American line, and that was an amazing experience. The boats launched off from one of the islands historically, and we followed that pattern from South Bass Island to sail out to meet the British. So that was a surprising and very different thing to do for this adventure. And it's a wonderful chapter in the book. It really takes you through the history and through the reenactment. And I also imagine the private's thoughts as he was in the battle.
Yeah, I enjoy that part of the book very much. And when you explore these islands, I imagine some of it is, of course, the nature of the island, the beauty of nature, but there's people on some of these islands too. Did you find that in any way, do island people differ from mainland people, their lifestyles, who they are?
They do. And historically, when people left Iceland in the 1800s and came over to America, many of them sought out islands. So Washington Island has a huge population of Icelandic people, descendants of people from Iceland. So, yes, I found them to be very self-reliant. I also found that on islands, the time moves a little differently. People are a little more unto themselves and removed from the world, but in a good way. So yes, I did explore that. Why live on an island? Why live cut off from the mainland like that? And there are several interviews in the book that explore that.
As you explored these islands, you must get asked this all the time, did you develop any favorites?
Of the islands?
Yeah.
Certainly, yeah. Isle Royale, that experience on the Moose Watch hiking expedition, we were actually gathering moose bones. I hope to continue to do that in the years to come. That was a transformative experience, and that island is really set apart from every other island that I visited for its wildness, for its geology, and for the fact that you can hear wolves calling in the middle of the night and moose crashing through your campsite during the day. That was fun, too. A Manitoulin Island was also quite set apart as the largest island, and I saw a great gray owl there. This is the largest owl in the world. And when it flew across the road, I thought it was a man in a cape. It was so large, but then it swooped up into a tree. It was just amazing. And I saw fishers there, which are in the weasel family, and I had never seen them anywhere else on my adventures.
Very neat. Now, the book cover you chose, and this was a new island to me too, Flower Pot Island. Tell us about that a little bit and how you chose the book cover.
Well, it's a striking photo, and the flower pot formation is, they're also called sea stacks. It's stacked limestone that was once underneath the water, and the water eroded the softer sediments around it. And then when the water receded, there's this tower of limestone remaining. So the tallest one is over 40 feet on Flower Pot Island. Flower Pot Island is located at the tip of the Bruce Peninsula on the eastern part of Lake Huron. And it's just quite, the formations are amazing, and the island has caves in it that are up the bluff, so you know that the lake was much higher at one time to carve out that cave. So you can kind of see the history of the lake there.
You've said that this, out of all of your journeys, has been the most challenging, most demanding. How is that?
Well, the physicality, and also I hiked, biked, and kayaked on this adventure, sometimes in the same week, so I got to be sore from pretty much from head to foot. So that was very demanding, but it was also, while it was the most demanding, I think it was the most fascinating of the three adventures because I knew so little about the islands, and I feel very privileged to have time to go to these islands and then to write this book to take people along with me, and I hope it encourages people to take their own island adventure.
Now, your background is actually in biology?
I have a master's in the biological sciences, yeah.
And on your journey to the islands, you also took part in some research with the piping plover. Tell us a little more about that.
Sure. The piping plover is an endangered shorebird, the Great Lakes subspecies of that bird. The other two subspecies are threatened. And the majority of these birds in the Great Lakes nest on North Manitou. So I volunteered for a week to be out on North and South Manitou, helping to monitor these birds. And I've watched birds my entire life, and I thought it would be fairly easy, but it was, you have to walk slowly, number one, and I'm not a slow walker, so I almost ran over the naturalist I was working with a couple times because she would stop abruptly, and I almost walked up her back, but it was very meticulous work, and we were monitoring on North Manitou around 50 birds, trying to keep track of them, make sure they were there every day, monitoring nests that were in the process of hatching while we were there, which was a real privilege. These birds are tiny, and when they hatch, they're just little puffballs and toothpicks. It's an amazing that they can just leave the nest immediately and run out, much like chickens. They'll just begin feeding. They don't have to be fed by the adults like other birds.
So as you walk and kayak and bike, what kind of observations did you have, and not just on this journey, but on all three, about Michigan waterways, this treasure that we have in terms of climate change, in terms of the environment, in terms of pollution?
Well, I go into the environmental aspect of the Great Lakes in all three books. And honestly, when I did the first adventure, I expected to be able to write a book about how beautiful Lake Michigan is. And I was shocked that there are so many Superfund cleanup sites along the way and places where highways were going into wetlands. And it was encouraging for me. My adventures actually took place along the time the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, the GLRI, was funded, putting a lot of money back into the Great Lakes to fund measurable improvements in the health of the lakes. This wasn't just for studies or for scientific research here and there. It was to fund projects to bring health back to the lakes. So during the 6 years that I've done my adventures, places like White Lake have come back to health. And there were other places that were listed as areas of concern that have been delisted at this point. So that was very encouraging to see. But we need to be caretakers for these lakes. And Michiganders have the most to gain and lose. We have the most shoreline on the Great Lakes. And if we are not caretakers, other states are not going to be, they're not as invested. They don't have the access that we have. Even Wisconsin, with all its shoreline on Lake Michigan, most of it is inaccessible. So people in Wisconsin turn inland for their recreation, whereas we turn to the Great Lakes.
And another thought that I have as a woman reading your books, and I have traveled alone and you know, made road trips or flown places, done some hiking and camping, but it does occur to me, and I wonder if it doesn't to other women readers. Did you at any point feel that it was dangerous in more ways for a woman than perhaps a man hiker? Did you ever feel threatened by anything? How did safety become or not become a concern for you?
I think anyone who's hiking alone needs to be aware of their surroundings. I think a woman hiking alone is probably more vulnerable than a man hiking alone. So I was always aware. I'm a fast hiker and I hike with a stick, so I always knew I at least had a stick with me if I ran into wildlife that was aggressive or people, but I've never had trouble on my hikes. I've always been respectful to people along the way if I was hiking through an urban area or people I met, you know, along the way who were on their beaches, you know, where their houses were. So I never had a confrontation. And there were some areas where I felt a little unsafe and I would try to get to a more busy road or near other people. Groups of people where I could hike and greet people and feel more safe.
Now, you had a way of staying safe from bears and wildlife. Tell us or sing that one to us.
Well, it's a two-part opera that helps keep the bears away. You just, with black bear, you need to let them know you're in the area. So I would sing songs like There's No Business, like Show Business. And then I had a two-part opera that went something like, don't eat me, I don't taste good. You think that I would, but I don't. But
I then, love it.
And then the second part was, actually, I'm delicious, but I won't tell that to you. And I think after all the hiking I've done, I probably would be delicious.
I absolutely love that. And then among your islands, another treat was you found Treasure Island. I didn't know that there was such a real place after reading about Treasure Island as a child. And it's rather unique. Tell us a little more about Treasure Island.
Sure. Treasure Island is on a lake, on an island in a lake. So Treasure Island is on Lake Mindamoya, which is a very large lake, on Manitoulin Island, which is floating in Lake Huron. So I was able to kayak out to Treasure Island and explore that a little bit. So, yeah, there are many.
Any idea why it's called Treasure Island?
I don't know. It was actually called, I think, Mindamoya Island before it was renamed Treasure Island, but I don't know why.
Well, somebody thought it was a treasure.
Yes, it's really beautiful.
So at this point, what is next on your plate? Are there more journeys, or you're also a wonderful fiction writer? What's next for you, Lorraine?
I have a packed schedule of book tour this year with the Islands book. And
a hike in itself.
Yes. Yes, so I'm looking forward to that. I love cooperating with independent bookstores along the way, and I'm actually pre-releasing the book to select independent bookstores in the area. And I do hope to return to my fiction a little bit. I have a novel that I'm trying to get an agent for, and I'm working on a second novel that I've not had time to really devote myself to, and I hope to get back to that too. I think I'll have to travel for that one. It goes to Europe, and I think it needs to go to Eastern Europe. So maybe I'll take a trip next year and finish that novel.
Give us a hint. What is it about?
That novel, I actually don't want to talk about the subject of that right now because it's still in the formative stage. The first novel that's complete is called Within the Walls of Grace, and it takes place in a hospital during the tumor board meeting. There's 13 characters in that meeting, and the novel is structured so that the spine of the novel is that meeting told in present tense, and then there's a chapter from every character's past and a chapter from every character's future. So by the time you're done with the novel, you get these arcs of everyone's life, and the reader ends up knowing more about these characters than they know about themselves in the present.
Fascinating. Well, best of luck on that. And before we let you go, Lorraine, your advice to people, and there's got to be a lot of us out there, that one thing that we always wanted to do but haven't done, what's your advice?
Make some time for it. Make some time. And if it's something large, do it in pieces. do it in small pieces. My first adventure hiking around Lake Michigan, I did that in 10 segments. I had to fit it into my very busy life. So don't put it off. These things call to us, and I've met many people along my journeys who have said, oh, I always meant to do this thing that called to them, so make time for it.
Thank you, Lorraine.
Thank you, Zinta.